Today, we are looking at the more collectible aspect of the comic books and the artwork that we love so much. Original comic book art is booming. The sales are continuing to climb. In the last few years alone, four pieces have gone for over $1 million, well into $1 million. And I don't think we're done yet. I think there is more to come. This is our series on $1 million pages, and it begins right now today on an all new episode of Robservations. Hey everybody, and welcome to another edition of Robservations. I am your host, Rob Liefeld. I have been making comics, writing comics, drawing comics, producing comics for just shy of 40 years. Yes, four decades. There is nothing more that I love than talking, discussing, parsing, examining comic books, the world of comic books, the incredible creators of comic books. So while it doesn't hurt to not be terribly informed of 40 years of comic books, it helps if you have a passing interest in comic books or superheroes. That's how we feel here at Robservations. We are superhero comic book crazy. And if you're just starting to get into comic books and superheroes and are curious about the world of these incredible comic book creators and these characters and the origins behind them and the inspirations of the men and women who create them, then you've come to the right place, because we are 1,000% obsessed. Since I was a kid, 7 years old, pulling comic books off the spinner racks at the liquor store, the Foodland, the supermarket, the 7-Eleven, all the mini marts, the comic books of my youth comforted me when times were tough, when dad was sick, when things were going rough for the Liefeld family. They inspired me. They filled my drawing pads, my sketches. And as my teachers would be loath to say, they sent notes home, because little Robbie wasn't supposed to be drawing on his exams and his tests. Comic books have been just so prominent throughout my life, and this podcast exists to discuss all things comic books, superheroes. And again, comic books aren't just about superheroes, but they are the predominant focus of my existence with superheroes. We have podcast episodes on sword and sorcery, the rise of fantasy, and martial arts figures, but both of which rose in the 70s. I have dedicated episodes of that throughout my back catalog. If you were to start at the beginning of Robservations, you would go on this incredible ride with me as I discover the world of comic books and am entertained by comic books and the superheroes and the incredible, as I continue to say, creators that make them, because it's the creators, the talents that make them that matter the most. And that ride that I'm sharing with you takes me all the way to getting hired myself as a teenager to draw comic books and to formally be hired at a show called WonderCon. The very first year WonderCon was in existence, when it was a show that was launching out of Oakland, California. I drove up there with my buddy. Marvel was the last person, the editor from Marvel was the last person I showed my samples to. It was do or die. I had to make it or break it in the big bright lights of the big two publishers, Marvel and DC, who up until that point had dominated the world of comic books. And at that show, I was hired by one man named Mark Gruenwald, the late Mark Gruenwald. He is no longer with us. He was a fantastic editor, writer, talent, executive at Marvel Comics, and every other publisher had passed. And then they didn't even want to look at my work. They didn't just pass on me. He was the first person to actually look at my work. Other publishers were not interested, not hiring, not interested. The reason I bring up WonderCon is because this past weekend, I attended the umpteenth version of WonderCon. It has been back, not back. It has been in Orange County, California for the better part of the last decade. It went from Oakland to San Francisco, and then out of San Francisco, I believe 2011, 2012, it relocated to Anaheim, California. 1 year, because of bookings and conflicted schedules. It jumped up to Los Angeles. I believe that was maybe 2016, 2017, somewhere in that vicinity. But for the most part, it has been back at the Anaheim Convention Center, right across the street from Disneyland. And this weekend, I was, again, able to go back and visit it. And I only had Friday. I only had Friday to pop in and say hi, because it's Easter weekend. And with that brought a ton of wonderful family obligations, the kind of family obligations you're excited about. Your kids are coming home. My adult kids were all under one roof for the first time since December. So that make Rob and Joy Liefeld extremely happy? Were we beaming? Were we so excited? Yes. Yes, we were. That meant more dinners, more conversations, more exchanging of ideas, just generally catching up. So I had Friday, the first day I had Friday of WonderCon, to go in and to enjoy the show. And part of enjoying that show and the process of attending WonderCon this last weekend is what inspired today's million dollar pages, because we are going to embrace a little bit today the collectible side of comic books and superheroes. Because let's not kid ourselves, that side matters to us, maybe sometimes more than we want to admit, but it's part of the fun. It's part of the collecting. I don't hit the word collecting a lot on the show, because the values of these things are in the experience of reading them and letting the excitement of my favorite stories wash over me. You know, whether they were illustrated by John Byrne and Jim Starlin, or Howard Chaykin, or Art Adams, or Walt Simonson, or Neil Adams, or George Perez, or the king of comics himself, Jack Kirby. The experience of those stories is what I value the most. Whenever I go on any sort of social media live stream, Instagram or whatnot, I share my spinner rack is always behind me, and the spinner rack, there have been newfangled spinner racks that have been fashioned by people who want to recreate the magic and get you a spinner rack, and they're still wow. Even those recently completed spinner racks that were part of different crowdfunding operations and campaigns, even those were really expensive. But I was fortunate enough about 25 years ago to start grabbing the available spinner racks in the very early 2000s that were available, that resembled the 70s spinner racks that held the amount of comic books that I experienced when I was a kid. And these are vintage. I have vintage spinner racks. I love them. One is prominent in my office, and it has comic books on it that aren't bagged and boarded. And if you're new to this show and you're like, why does it matter if it's bagged and boarded? Well, for me, it doesn't matter. But for so many collectors, they want the condition preserved. The condition. I pivot to my higher octave. My as Barry Gibb was my falsetto. I'm going to pivot to my falsetto. The conditions that are so important to everybody. I'm feeling a little randy this morning, so just hang with me. The comic books on my spinner rack they're torn. Some of them are bound together by tape. They're wrinkled. They are what we call in today's world reader copies. Except to me, this is how they were presented when I was a kid. I cannot emphasize enough that when you went to the liquor store or the 7-Eleven, sometimes they'd have a couple months worth of comic books on the spinner rack. You could get presumably 1, 2, 3 issues of the Fantastic Four that came out in previous months. So if one or the Avengers or X-Men, Marvel Comics were better represented in my youth. They seemed to have a deeper distribution network. They were in more of these different venues, whether it was the liquor store, whether it was the 7-Eleven, the mini marts, the grocery stores. Marvel, Spider-Man, Hulk, Captain America, the Marvel brand was seemingly more prominent in all of my interactions with comic books. And the conditions were terrible. They were folded. They were handled. People looked at them and put them back. In today's crazy world, I mean, there could have been snot on some of these pages. Okay, in today's world, they could have been riddled with COVID. Okay, and you were next man up. If the one guy looked at the Hulk and put it back, you're next man up. You're grabbing it, and maybe it grabs you, and you walked out with it. So on my spinner rack, The comic books are reader copies. They are presented in the way that I encountered them. There were no bags and boards for comic books in the 1970s. I didn't even get introduced to that practice. Do you want bags and boards with that? Until I was at my first comic store mid-1980, okay, when I was 13 years old. That's how late I came in contact with bags and boards. But the value, the monetary value, that so there's the value of the experience, which I put at the highest premium. But then there is, of course, the collectible value, and it's fun. And I love sharing it as well, because sometimes your eyes pop out of your head and some of those collectible pricings, some of those collectible values were really slapping me in the face at WonderCon. WonderCon is a very big show. At one point, I thought it was going to be a top three show. It is co-owned. It is absolutely owned by San Diego. It is owned by Comic-Con International, as we here in Southern California who grew up with it. We just call it San Diego Comic-Con. When people don't refer to it as San Diego Comic-Con, I know that they didn't experience it prior to the new millennial branding. But it was San Diego Comic-Con. They purchased WonderCon and added it to their portfolio. And it is in the best venue, the Anaheim Convention Center, nestled between the Marriott and the Hilton, and then the Hyatt down on the corner, Morton Steakhouse. It is the most beautiful venue, the most beautifully manicured venue. The palm trees, the incredible fountain that all the cosplayers gather around. It is just an incredible, incredible venue. It is extremely well attended. I would say it's in the top 10 shows in North America. It feels like at any moment it could explode and go all the way up to the top five, to the top three, but it is extremely well attended. Tons of vendors, toys, comic books. CGC was out in full force, and I'll give a plug later for my CGC in-house signing. You need to get on that. We are looking down the last 4 weeks of you being able to submit, and we want you to be able to submit. So get your comic books in, get that surge going. But they had one of the bigger displays there. Comic books are very much they are a priority at this show, maybe more than many of the supposed comic book shows you go to. If you've been going to a lot of the expos or some of these other shows and you notice that comic books are less and less represented, well, I've been there. I've seen that. It's one of the reasons I don't regret going off what they call the convention circuit. I'm not really, for now 3 years, I'm not a guest at any of these shows, because I feel like they're not as much about comic books and comic book material as they are about photo ops with actors, actresses, voice actors. That's great, but those weren't the comic book shows of my youth. Comic book shows focus on comic book creators, the people, the makers of the dreams, and the people who are creating the roles that are transformational for so many of the talents in the realm of acting. You know, without comic book creators, think about how many actors don't now have an identifiable go-to role, something that they can, when maybe a couple of movies didn't go right, they can run and put on that costume and be that character. That is the domain and the responsibility of comic creators. And I am a proud part of the comic book community, the alumni who have brought this stuff to light. So at WonderCon, tons of comic book sellers, and I would be going through the different comic books, looking at the recent values. And let me tell you something. I had a little sticker shock. My good buddy Marat Michaels, who entered the business as my assistant when he was a teenager. I was hired at WonderCon, by the way, as a teenager, and then later in three and a half years into my career, in my very early 20s, I had met Marat in high school at some local Los Angeles conventions, and we had started communicating on the phone, and then I offered him a job to come and work with me down in Orange County. He drove from LA, and he was there for the birth of the New Mutants, X-Force, just Cable, Domino, Deadpool, all of it happened in my Fullerton studio, of which Marat was present 4 days a week. And he would help with any manner of ruling the borders with ink, filling in all manner of different ink spots, ruling backgrounds, just making Xeroxes, helping me go on FedEx runs. But the richest part of the time that we spent together was all the conversations we had about the comic books that we loved. Well, that hasn't changed. That hasn't changed now that both of us are, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm going to say this, are in our 50s. So Murat met me and we were able to wander the hall for the few hours that I was there. And he was there when we were both experiencing sticker shock on some of these comic books. But most importantly, where we're headed with the $1 million pages is original art. As we pivoted towards the key booth nostalgic investments and their great double wide booth of original art, original 11x17 drawings and art by all manner of incredible talents that have helped forge and make this incredible comics industry with these incredible pages. There's nothing like holding original art in your hands and examining the brushes, the brush strokes, the quill lines. Maybe it was markers. Maybe it was shot directly from pencils. There's ink wash on some of these. There's different textures. There's grease, you know, grease pencil. All manner of different technique are applied to these different originals as you get to examine them, put them under the light, see the different pressure of the quill or the pen nib, see just the soft application of the inkers who, and so many of them more trained with brushes, because brush, the ink lasts longer and you can extend your time with that tool longer on the page before going back and dipping it back in the inkwell. It contains more ink than a quill and you can utilize it. And obviously you can make different shapes and go from thick to thin and create your contours easier when you are utilizing a brush. And so many of the 60s and 70s inkers did have brushes. So we're examining all this artwork, but within a matter of minutes at this incredible booth of original art, Murat and I found ourselves surrounded by multiple collectors and multiple representatives in the original art business. At one point, there was three of the top 10 original art dealers in the industry right there, Anaheim, California, Friday afternoon. And I am here to share with you some of what I gleaned from these conversations, as I am an avid original art collector myself, and then look into what we are not only looking at as the $1 million sales that have happened with significant pages, $1 million pages, but also based on my knowledge and my expertise in this, and the back and forth with other experts, what I believe is coming on the horizon as the next kind of wave of $1 million pages. And now, before I go any further, you're like, wait, Liefel, did you just drop your expertise in regards to original art? Yeah, I'm comfortable saying that. I am 1000% comfortable saying that. You know what? I am an avid buyer of original art. I have a decent collection. I have a very decent collection with some really outstanding pieces in them. And I am someone who is regularly petitioned to see if I'm interested in buying, and especially in this original art game, more expensive pieces of late. Now, I am one of dozens who I know. So I know who I am up against and who I am competing up against. I also know who I can't compete with, who I am not capable of keeping up with in terms of the incredible amount of money that others can spend beyond me in regard to the original art world. But I have amassed a very nice collection, and it has become more and more focused, as I knew it would be, as many of you have probably experienced as you have been maybe starting or observing others' collections. When I was a kid, I would wait in line for my favorite artists. And at the time, the artist that I can tell you right now that I got commissions and sketches in my sketchbook are Mike Zeck, Art Adams, George Perez, Jerry Ordway, Paul Smith, Dave Cockrum, Al Milgram. Honestly, the list goes on and on and on. I have sketches from Frank Miller. I would, you know, wait in line and with my saved up money, especially as a teenager, to get that cool sketch, and I would pair them together. And as I save more money, I got a beautiful Paul Smith Wolverine battling Sabretooth. I got a George Perez Wolverine and Cyborg. I mean, I commissions are fun. You get to jam and you get to dictate the terms of your commission. The reason I bring this up is eventually you move out of commissions, because once you've gotten your favorite artist to draw your favorite characters together and it worked out, they didn't draw them in profile, they didn't, you know, obscure the vision. I've got Bill Sienkiewicz sketches. I've got John Romita Jr. sketches. The art of getting the commission that you want. For me, I know I always wanted a really good, clean shot of the face and at least a good portion of the body in action. Nowadays, you know, you're going to pay bust prices, face prices, full figures, two figures. You know, and the idea is that all is the figures are going to be in view and the face will be in view and not obscured. But once you pivot from commissions, and eventually many do, because they realize they can't turn away from the fact, you cannot ignore that a published page is valued more, is worth more. And that's just the reality that a page that has been published that generates that value of experience with the readership, with the fans, that's going to have a different connection. That's going to garner a different price. And many times it's a greater price. So that's where the first evolution started. And for me, it started from commissions to buying published art. And at one point, you know, I was fortunate enough to be in the home of the King of Comics, Jack Kirby. And it was understood. I was asked ahead of time if I would have interest in buying some of Jack's art. And at the time that I went and visited him, the very first time that I was up visiting Jack and Roz Kirby in their home in Southern California, Roz led me into a room of which there was multiple, I'm going to say 15 full 11x17 envelopes. And in each of those envelopes was a full issue. But here's the deal. Like, my wife asked me recently, why didn't you buy any Marvel stuff? Because I was telling her how Jack's Marvel work is worth more than his DC Comics worth. And for the most part, no one is going to argue with me on that fact. For the most part, you know, 9 out of 10 times, the Marvel art that Jack created is going to be the more valuable, is going to be the more desired and just, you know, more revered, because so much of his history and building the career that was Jack Kirby's was on the back of the Fantastic Four and the Avengers and the X-Men and all the characters that he helped bring to life, especially from World War II, Captain America. So all of those aspects go into creating a greater desire for Jack's work, given his strong ties to Marvel. The DC work, I think, is in many cases more refined and better at his peak period. I love the 1970 to 1977 Jack Kirby. I think he is a man in full. His work has never been better, more incredibly polished. But that's what they had in regards to offering. They had issues of Commandy, OMAC, New Gods, Mr. Miracle. There was a particular issue of New Gods. I believe it's New Gods number 9, maybe it's number 10, but the book is called The Gift. It's the origin of Orion. I was able to hold those pages and flip through that. And Roz, very sweetly, very kindly, with the biggest smile on her face, said, oh, that issue's not available. That's Jack wrote and illustrated that about our love affair, and so that issue's mine. And I was like, oh, that is so sweet. That is so sweet. But it's also the best issue of the New Gods. So, you know, like, off limits, you admire it, but the collector, and you go, oh man, that's the one that is the most. It is young, high father, and it is a romantic but very action-packed kind of war story, fantasy war story. It is brilliant. But that was understood from the jump. And so then I left with an issue of Commandy, an issue of Mr. Miracle, and a full issue of OMAC. And I could not be more thrilled. Yes, I left with 3 full issues of comics, but not a Marvel purchase among them. And again, they weren't offered. Jack didn't have any. His Marvel art was sparse, and it was not available. And look, he got really top. There was top dollars being asked for these and top dollars being paid. I came prepared. This is 1993, and I had my checkbook, 1992, 1993. I had my checkbook at the ready, and was excited about obtaining these. I had also started in high school. I had started buying artwork from George Perez, his Teen Titans, his Justice League work, and Michael Golden, some original Micronauts pages. I was an avid collector for a teenage boy on a strict budget of lawn mowing and later delivering pizzas. This is you know, these were generally once a year. These were generally once a year indulgences that I would do in the summer when the convention season was around, and I had saved the maximum amount of dollars. And as so many of you probably remember, or maybe this was your habit as well, my Christmas money would seed me all the way through June. That would be my money to start saving. And it was fun to save for the big summer conventions, the San Diego convention, maybe a convention that was coming through Los Angeles, one of the creation cons that would bring the big guests out. But so you're buying published art, and you understand already that splash pages and covers are more expensive. And no matter how much you try and make the math work as a teenager, the covers, even back in the day, were for me out of my range. And I'm talking about, you know, walking in with a budget of maybe $120 and having to figure out, am I going to buy this $60 page, this $80 page, or maybe I'm going to be able to get these two pages for $45 and get out of here at $90 and with $30 in my pocket. It was nerve-wracking, because the whole time you know how hard it took for you to earn that money to mow those lawns, to deliver those pizzas, to do as many extra chores as you possibly could to cultivate that seed money from the holidays and just continue to build. So I was buying published original art. I got some DC Comics Presents Superman versus OMAC. I got some Titans. I got a Justice League splash page by George Perez with all the villains. And it's funny because when I was getting into comics, and they don't, you know, anybody who told you that anybody got into comics for money was misleading you, especially in the 80s. These are, you start at $60 page rates and hope to get to 80. And then, man, when you got $100 a page, you were like, oh my gosh. And then I'm going to get $125 a page for pencils, and I'm going to get $60 a page for inks. And how do I get that combined to $200 and then $225? This is how comic books went. This is how the wages of page rates was going for everybody who was breaking in during this time. And then you hoped against hope that your book would get royalties, and that the royalties would be the extra windfall. And again, royalties absolutely changed comic books as we know it. But little Robbie Liefeld was on a budget, and he started his collection meekly. Of course, then the tremendous success that was happening with my career from New Mutants to X-Force to Youngblood, again, I was able to afford to buy some of the more bougie pages, the more high-end stuff. Now, much of that art is now worth so much more money. Pages from John Byrne's X-Men issues that a few years back would have cost you $30,000 are now, and you're like, wait, whoa, Liefeld, you just made a jump. It is a jump. It is a giant jump. There was a page of the X-Men that is mostly sound effects, and an art dealer of mine, an art dealer that I knew very well here in the Southland, kept insisting to me that he needed $18,000 for this. And it is from the John Byrne, Terry Austin era. It has some faces on it. It's got a face of Professor Xavier, but most of it is special effects as powers are being engaged. And $18,000, I just couldn't see paying that. Now, again, I know I'm about to name numbers, but the title of this episode is, in fact, Million Dollar Pages. So we're working up. We're working there. $18,000 is just, I couldn't see myself spending that. I said, look, if you want to sell this to me for $10,000, I will buy this, because my appetite for the Byrne Austin stuff, that is where my focus has really rounded out. And as I was warned, again, so we've been to commissions to then published pages. And then you know that splash pages and covers are the ones that are the most expensive, the most and again, a splash page is the most killer shot in the book. A cover is the most killer shot in the book, or of the book, on the book, It covers the thing. These are just kind of understood as you get into the original art business. And or not business, collecting, because I don't actively sell the art that I collect. I do sell the art that I make, and I have since day one, and we'll pivot back to selling your own art that you make before the show wraps, and some of the concepts and the ideas and the influences that other artists passed along to me over the ages. But I am not a seller of original art that I collect. I am a buyer still. And my focus has been very much on the John Byrne, Terry Austin, X-Men run that I speak so prominently of often here on the show, because it was and remains such a tremendous influence. Not one John Byrne, Terry Austin page, by the way, was at WonderCon for sale on anybody's table, in anybody's collection, from any dealer. It's becoming harder and harder to obtain. And getting back to the splash pages and the covers and the focusing of the collection, eventually you do find yourself focusing. And once you get three of something and five, and I'm talking about a run or a body of work, you tend to like go on a run and say, man, I am able to obtain these. And so that's why this $18,000 page was even of any interest to me whatsoever, because then it would make it that I have 24 pages of John Byrne and Terry Austin X-Men. Okay. Currently, as it stands, I have 23 pages of their X-Men run. Now, each of those books were generally around 17 pages long, and the inker, the spectacular inker, the talent that finished those pages, polished them up, and made them so next level, is from a gentleman named Terry Austin, part of the Byrne Austin tandem that commands top dollar in regards to original art. He, the inker, would get at least seven pages of every third of every issue, and he would get one of every three covers. And as it is understood, and Mr. Terry Austin confirmed to me to my face in 2005 in Baltimore, that he has kept, for the most part, those seven pages in issue and those covers. And that is in his collection, and he has no intention of releasing them. He has even, as I understand, and if things have changed, then I'm not aware, but as in the last year, I was once again reminded that he intends to give those to a museum and pivot them away from the collector's community even further. He does not want them sold. He does not want them in collector's hands. He wants them to go to a gallery or a museum so that we can all enjoy them. Now, that is what I understand to be his intent, and numerous art dealers have confirmed that they have been also informed of that fact by Mr. Terry Austin. So those X-Men pages that are in his collection, and again, you know, Terry did well over 20 issues, something in the 30s. And so now you go 30 times 7 plus, you know, one of every three covers. You know, Terry Austin has the greatest collection of art, of X-Men art, in existence. And now a talent like him, who did the exact same, applied the exact same kind of protection of their work, collection, keeping of their work, is Mr. Walt Simonson, who has presumably everything that he has ever drawn, from Battlestar Galactica's to issues of Star Wars, certainly his Thor run, and then the irony of his inker on X-Men Titans, the single best crossover issue in the history of Marvel and DC getting together. None of them, and most people will completely agree with this, that Marvel and DC's X-Men Titans is the high water mark for those crossovers that they did briefly in the 80s. I know they rejoined them in the 90s. Nothing even came close. Walt Simonson, peak of his powers, best he's ever been. Chris Claremont's story, the X-Men, the Titans, Dark Side, Dark Phoenix, Deathstroke, the Terminator, as kind of the third tier bad guy in it. It's spectacular. Walt drew it, Terry inked it. Neither of them released their work into the public. So both of them have held on to the lion's share of those pages. They are unavailable. Now, I'm going to get to the cover of that book, X-Men Titans, as we speculate on million-dollar pages. But in regards to collections, you know, you don't see Walt Simonson's Thor pages anywhere, because he has them all. He wrote and he penciled and inked the lion's share of that book, which means all the artwork came back to him. Terry Austin would ink certain pages of Thor when he wasn't able to. So the two of them, between them, and maybe Bob Wyachek, who was another inker who jumped in, but they have the lion's share of this work. And they have kept it under wraps in their families, in their collections, and they may never make it out to the public. How exciting is that, right? There's absolute admiration for that practice. I have bumped into people who are resentful of it, and I don't relate to that. I think it's admirable, especially being the artist who creates art himself. It is really admirable to hang on to that volume, that amount of work. It truly is, I think, an admirable pursuit, but it also sets the market in regards to the X-Men and Walt Simonson's work. So if I have been able to amass, if I could get 24, if I get that 24th page of X-Men art by John Byrne and Terry Austin, oh my gosh, I'll just, you know, in your head, you convince yourself that this will complete me, but it won't. It will not. This will not complete you. You will immediately then want for your 25th page. That page that I wanted for 18 grand went out into auction, and at the end of the day, the dealer who was reluctant to let it go for 10 actually netted $10,000 from the sale, from submitting it to auction, and what he got back was $10,000. So my offer really was the offer that he would have ended getting. That I know the gentleman that got the page. I'm so happy for him. It is an absolute legit piece of the X-Men lore. But that is on the low end, mostly sound effects, a nice face or two. But that is what I'm giving this to you to tell you what that selection of art commands. There was a splash page that I was looking into for the X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, a few years back, just to talk about the escalating prices. And at the time, the dealer was asking $60,000 for it. I hesitated, foolishly. I should have jumped on it. And you're like, Liefeld, this is unreal. These are unrealistic numbers. Look, I save my money for my own kind of indulgences. And I'm not into sports cars, and I'm not into nice clothes. I'm not into really nice much of anything. If you've seen me, I have about a four hoodie. I have a four hoodie rotation that I come in and out of. And this splash page by these dealers was 60. A couple of years later, it had gone to 90. And when I last inquired, it's now $140,000 for this particular splash page, which has a lot of the characters looking away from you. They're full figures, but they're looking away from you. So if you are wondering why I hesitated and I didn't pull the trigger when it was 60. Or when it was 90, it's because I'm not getting a good look at the faces. They are, in fact, semi-turning away from camera while they are in action, and it's almost profiles, but they're not, because some of their faces are obscured. So with that in mind, and they are within their rights, that is what the market will bear. If it went to auction, that is what the market would bear. The mid-level for a auction, Burn Austin X-Men page is now, based on umpteen auctions over the last, you know, 6 years, and the private collectors that I speak with, the median price you're going to pay is 50 grand. That is your median price. And honestly, that's probably rising to about 55 to 60 as we speak, as I talk into this mic. They are very, you don't get a lot of these pages at auction. And when they do show up, they are for enormous sums of money. I mean, you're talking about the cost of a nice car is what these pages are now valued at. Pages that I was buying 10 years ago for $15,000 in the Uncanny X-Men lore are now easily $40,000, $50,000 pages. Easily. Based on, because you look at the content of the page, the amount of close-ups, the characters, the full figures, and it is pretty quick that you can ascertain that, wow, what I paid back here for 15, I'm now looking at auction, and all the same elements on this page that is currently going for 50 plus is what I have on my page that I paid for 15. And that's just one example. Have I bought pages for $500 and been offered $10,000 for them? Yes, I have. And as we pivot towards these million-dollar pages, I'm just telling you, in certain regards, again, there's expertise. You know what something is valued. And when someone comes to you and asks you, what do you think? I have been offered all manner of pages. I have been offered X-Men pages that John Byrne drew, but they're not part of his classic Uncanny X-Men. They're not part of the X-Men line. They're X-Men characters that he drew in Marvel Team-Up, in Iron Fist, in other showcases. So yes, is that Wolverine and Nightcrawler? It is, but it's not in the Uncanny X-Men. And that right there kicks up the value. And if you're like, are you crazy? No, I'm telling you the truth. A Wolverine drawn in an issue of Iron Fist or drawn in an issue outside of the Uncanny X-Men is going to get you a lesser price. It just is. That's just how the market responds. They want those existing, they want the X-Men pages, the Uncanny X-Men pages from 1977 to 1980 are the ones that are going to get you the most money. And if you're saying, but are they as much as Jim Lee's? Yes. The average John Byrne page of art is in the 50,000 range. I would say right now the average Jim Lee page is probably 35,000. John Byrne still, after all this time, is at least ticking up 15,000. Now, if you want to get into splash pages and covers, this is where we're going to get into the million-dollar pages. I've really focused on X-Men. I could go out to Superman and Batman, but again, let me tell you something right now. Every art dealer will tell you with a straight face. Well, you know, Rob, a Hulk John Byrne page is worth more than a John Byrne Superman page because Marvel art just does better. Marvel art does better. Original art from Marvel sells better than original art from DC. And if you doubt that, and don't run to Frank Miller and Dark Knight or Watchmen to be your pace horse here. Okay, look at the incredible aggregate across the line of both books, and it is true. It is true. A George Perez Avengers 1977 page is going to cost you more than a 1982 Teen Titans page. It just is. Like 17 pages against 17 pages, the Marvel stuff is going to go for more. This is a perfect time to pivot to just recently an Avengers cover from a very special issue. And in the minds of the kids who were 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, that's a wide kind of range, but I was 8 when Avengers 161 came out, and it was an incredible issue. The art is fantastic. It is by George Perez, Pablos Marcos, and Ant-Man is very mental, kind of losing his mind. He lures the Avengers. He lures them into basically all being grouped together, and he takes each and every one of them down. Yes, he takes Iron Man down. How does he do that? His ants crawl all the way inside of Iron Man's armor, and red ants attack Tony Stark from within. They go in through his openings in his mouth and his eyes, and he takes out Iron Man. He takes out Scarlet Witch by covering her in ants, and she has a nervous breakdown and passes out. He grows from small to big and keeps hitting people with the propulsion of his transformation from small to big. He knocks out Black Panther. He takes down all of the Avengers in different strategic ways, and it is revealed that he is working on behalf of Ultron. They capture him towards the end after he takes down all these incredible Avengers. They capture him, and then Ultron breaks in at the end. And again, you find out that Ant-Man, Hank Pym at the time, was under the influence of Ultron and working on behalf of Ultron, and takes down the Avengers. It is the first part of an incredible two-part issue. Avengers 162 is my favorite standalone Avengers comic of all space and time, and it does not exist without 161 to help set it up and inform it. But then you have four Avengers, Thor, Iron Man, Black Panther, and Wonder Man going in to battle with Ultron in a battle that they all believe they are going to be killed in. It is the most gripping, consequential, emotional Avengers two-parter that I still have ever encountered because of all the doubts of each of them knowing that they're about to meet their fate. Wonder Man literally believes he is going to die and is terrified and doesn't even know why he is accompanying them into this mission because he just came back to life himself, and he continues to opine about the fact that his life is about to be forfeit. So, high stakes. The cover to 161 with the Avengers by George Perez and Pablos Marcos, and it is literally all the Avengers being attacked by Ant-Man, went in January of 2024, this year, for $288,000. It shocked the community, but you need multiple buyers going at each other back and forth. This thing went on and on and on in real time at Heritage Auctions as two different people were boom, 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 boom. You said life, well, you said $1 million pages. No, no, no. This for an Avengers cover in this period to be unearthed and exposed and put to auction. Because again, I'm going to tell you right now, the cover to 162 is going to go for even higher. Okay, there are Avengers covers that are going to go for even higher than this. This, as far as stories go, has tremendous emotional resonance. It is the second best cover of the two-parter. 162 is the better of the two, is the more memorable. But 161 is great, but it went for just shy of $300,000 because it came to light and collectors went after it. And the owner is super excited, super thrilled that he came out on top, eventually wore down the opposition who was trying to obtain it in auction, and he is the victor. He could not be happier to have this cover, but this set a new market price because it was quoted to me again and again and again this weekend at WonderCon as I inquired about two Avengers covers, and they are both now in the 100 range because, and they cited directly this auction, the cover of Avengers 161. Come on, man. That went for almost $300,000. This one is easily, this is also by George Perez. This is from that era. This is 100. Come on, it's 100. And they have you in regards to the most recent comp price, just like houses. We had a house in our neighborhood, first house in years to go for sale. This place was a freaking In-N-Out or Chick-fil-A drive-thru for about eight hours a day on the Saturday and Sunday. They had over 300 people come to the house, and they had over 40 offers for the house. The market responds when something is unearthed, and you have to, as a buyer, just participate in the rules of engagement that, hey, now this is out there, and now this is the price, and then that is used as a comp for everything else around you. You don't think everybody in our neighborhood is comping? They are. So the same thing absolutely applies to art, and this recent Avengers 161 cover has reset the market for covers by George Perez in that era. And believe you me, I bought a Teen Titans cover. I bought a Teen Titans cover, a pencil and ink George Perez Teen Titans cover 5 years ago for $20,000. So, and I don't believe if that went for market that it would get even into the 40,000 range. Marvel stuff, Avengers, and then what happens is on that cover, there is Iron Man, Wonder Man, Ant-Man, Vision, Scarlet Witch, you know, there's a ton. There is an absolute ton of Avengers represented on that cover. So you're going, well, why this other one go for only 100? Why are they only asking for 100, this dealer? It's because there's only two Avengers on the cover. There's Iron Man and there's Wonder Man on this cover. So again, if there were more Avengers on the cover, I guarantee you that cover wouldn't be 100, it'd be 150, 160. Because again, the more characters are represented, the more Marvel faces that you recognize, the higher the price. The market was reset on these Avengers covers by George Perez in this era by this near $300,000 sale that happened in January of this year, 2024. But this podcast is supposed to be called Million Dollar Pages. Why are we talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars pages? Well, again, the market has been shaped. And so let's give to you the $5 million pages that are on record as of right now, the most recent, the baller status pages. Because artwork has been going for million. It has been going for millions of dollars. Now, there's five key pieces in the Million Dollar Club, and this is as up to date as last summer, okay? As summer of 2023. No new Million Dollar pages have entered. But let's just start at the top. We're not going to go backwards. We're going to go at the top. And as a name we don't mention here often enough, he is the preeminent fantasy painter of the fantasy painter comic book world. He did not make his name in comic book superheroes, but certainly in the fantasy and science fiction painting world, there is no name that tops Frank Frazetta. And the Egyptian Queen painting that served to be the cover of Eerie Magazine, which was a science fiction, fantasy, horror anthology title. Eerie Magazine, number 23. This is the cover of the Egyptian Queen. It was made in 1969. It sold at Heritage Auction in 2019 prior to the pandemic for $5.4 million. $5.4 million. Think of the sweet mansion that you could get for $5.4 million. Think of all the land you can buy in Montana, in Tennessee. I mean, $5.4 million in Texas, okay? So that's the queen. Frank Frazetta's Egyptian Queen sits on the top. It's a beautiful cover. It is stunning, and it has every right to be as in demand. And the Frazetta collectors, they know how difficult it is to even have one of these paintings see the light of day. So it is no secret why this was so coveted. This is a signature, one of the most recognizable Frank Frazetta pieces ever. So it is not a surprise that the bids went as high as they did here. In the number two slot, at $3.9 million, this is the one I'm not really familiar with. The Blue Lotus. It is a painting from the European comic book Tintin. You've seen Tintin. I think Spielberg and Peter Jackson combined to do that Tintin movie about a decade back. It is the cover of The Blue Lotus, and it is a painting by Hergé, like Serge from Beverly Hills Cop, by Hergé, and it is of Tintin. It was sold by Arc Toral in Paris for $3.9 million in 2022. $3.9 million. You can see very clearly the dog. You can see Tintin, and you can see this red dragon taunting them. The Blue Lotus sold for $3.9 million. You know, again, overseas, different characters command different attention and are more esteemed than a lot of our comic book superheroes. And Tintin is certainly, you know, one of the biggest worldwide recognized characters. And then this very rare 1936 piece of artwork, and boom, $3.9 million. That's a whopper. The number three certainly sent shockwaves through the comic book collecting world in 2022. It is the three-quarter splash page of Spider-Man as he bonds in the story for the first time with the black symbiotic costume that would go on to have its own identity as Venom. It is Secret Wars number 8. It is the final page at $3.3 million. It is a really brilliant, really, really nice page of Peter Parker for the first time, a very dramatic, you know, pose. It's drawn by Mike Zeck. Forgive me for not shouting out the artist, Mike Zeck. I believe it was inked by John Beatty. But this thing is just, it's a stunning splash page, but the fact that it went for $3.3 million sent shockwaves, because it's not a cover. It's an interior page. It is the record breaker for an interior page of art. The others that you're going to see, the others that we're going to continue. Well, one more is a cover. And then there's another kind of page from an illustration book. It really wasn't a comic book. It was an illustrated book, but this is the record for an interior page of art, is the three-quarter splash of, by Mike Zeck, of Peter Parker bonding. There's four word balloons as he says, I wonder why it didn't come out like my old one. That's what I was thinking of. Not different, but not, he says, not bad, different, but not bad. It's a big deal in real time watching this. Some of my friends and I had been wondering, would this go for $1 million? It was at around $600,000 before it went to live auction, and it exploded to 1.2. to 1.6, to 1.8. Oh my gosh, is it going to get to 2? 2! I mean, I was yelling out loud, as I'm sure everyone was. People have talked about the recollections of watching this skyrocket. $3.3 million for the absolute bonding for the first time in the story, because you know that the actual black cover on the black costume on Spider-Man had different debuts in regards to being published, but in the construction of the story, this is where it first bonds with him, and this is also called a what they call a first appearance. They call a first appearance page. You know, this is a first appearance of Spider-Man with the symbiote in the context of the story as the saga rolls out. And this was also heavily believed to be a part of the Techno Bros. This was the crypto peak and Bitcoin and Dogecoin. And this was believed. Now, no one knows who has this. The person who has this has not come forward, has not made themselves known. But that is what is believed in the lore, the mythology. Again, you need two people swinging it out, going back and forth in real time. Boom, 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 to get to $3.3 million for this. Again, largely seen to be part of the crypto bro, you know, the cryptocurrency craze. And it's going to be hard to top. That's an interior page. That's a price that's going to be hard to top for sure. Number four is, and I know the gentleman who had this a few years back. I'm not certain it was he who sold it, but a collector named Joe Lee was showing everybody in 2016 as he picked up this from a show. He picked up this original, which has an acetate silhouette by Frank Miller. The cover to Dark Knight number one, people. The cover to Dark Knight Returns number one sold for $2.4 million. The majority of it is a airbrushed blue sky with the very striking lightning bolt. Now, again, I don't know if this changed hands afterwards, but it was about 9 years ago, 8 years ago, that this gentleman was picking this up and paused carefully to show all of us. I saw how oversized the piece was. It was a very nice piece. This went into auction about, again, right after the Spider-Man. So I'm going to guess maybe we're at the 2 year mark, but the Dark Knight Returns, the cover to the Dark Knight Returns. And there was some controversy with this as well, given that there's an overlay and that, you know, again, you're always going to get people who detract. You're always going to, those voices are going to exist. And they were saying, is this really just you paying for a blue, you know, a airbrush blue background with a lightning bolt through it, with a painted lightning bolt. Now here's the deal. It is the art that the cover was shot from. That's what it is. That is what constitutes the original art. You have a piece of history, which is more significant in this case, I believe, than the actual piece of art. I think all of us would rather have the cover to Dark Knight 2 than we would, any of the other covers. And I'm not sure that would get this same price, because this is the launch, this is the issue, this is the image that you think of when you think about the comic that changed Batman forever and kind of the high water mark of Frank Miller's accomplishment and so many of our youths. This electric bolt of lightning, we all felt it. It was striking us as much as it was striking the silhouette. That's the jolt that this put on the comics industry. So this went for $2.4 million, making it the number four in the Million Dollar Club. Rounding out the Million Dollar Club is artist Bernie Wrightson, possibly the most accomplished pen and ink illustrator of all space and time. The intricate details and the techniques that he put forth in his work are largely believed to be like non-transferable. Like no one's been able to pull this off. And it took him 7 years to put together his Frankenstein adaptation, which was a series of plates of and in many cases double page shots like this, and it's called Frankenstein, and it has the Frankenstein monster grabbing Dr. Frankenstein and pulling him as if he's gonna, you know, choke him out. And it is against this intricate illustration of the lab and the flasks and all of the equipment and the shelves and just the textures on the walls and the beams. It is a stunning, it is the signature piece. It is the signature identifiable piece of this Bernie Wrightson Frankenstein. If this is the first time you've ever heard of the Bernie Wrightson Frankenstein book, you need to get it. You need to see it. You need to encounter it. I encountered it in the early 80s, and it blew my mind. Again, the incredible intricacy and the detail. This was another A Man in Full flexing at the peak of his abilities with the most intricate, I mean, every fold of the clothes, nuance of the cloth, of the shirt, of the lab coat, and then all of the different articles and particles in the lab are just going to blow you away. This sold for $1.2 million. And that rounds up the Frankenstein at $1.2 million, the Dark Knight at $2.4 million, the Spider-Man, that symbiote three-quarter splash that was in Secret Wars number 8, $3.3 million, the Blue Lotus with Tintin cover, $3.9 million, and the winner and probably champ for quite some time is the Frank Frazetta cover to Eerie Magazine number 23, what is called the Egyptian Queen at, like, just stunning, $5.4 million. The million-dollar pages. Now, will there be more? I think there will. And we're going to tackle that in the million-dollar pages part two, where we pick up and we examine what is to come. What will be the million-dollar pages in the future? Are they right around the corner? There's an auction coming up later in this week. Do I believe there's... I'm going to tell you right now. Do I believe there's a million-dollar page in there? What I'm going to tell you right now is come back for part two of million-dollar pages. We've laid the groundwork, and we're going to get back into it in our next installment and round out and finish up our examination of the million-dollar pages and the million-dollar pages that are to come. All right, I am so excited to come back and finish this up because I got so much to share with you. So much is going on in the world of collectibles and comic books, and especially original art. So this is going to continue in our very next installment. Thank you so much for listening to the show. It is so great to know that there is a couple of you on the other end of this, and that you are listening and supporting the show. And again, it is just a thrill to be able to talk comics and to talk collectibles, and to talk all the fun stuff that we talk together. And when I am not on this podcast, I am all over social media. There was a platform, it was called Twitter. It got changed to X. I'm over there. I'm at Robert Liefeld, R-O-B-E-R-T-L-I-E-F-E-L-D, the whole damn stretch that I just read to you, at Robert Liefeld. You can come at me with your comments, your mentions, your replies. I read all of them, even the nonsense. So much enjoy the back and forth talking to all of you on that incredible platform. I have a great time. I've been on Twitter since, I think, 2008. Had a great time getting to know all of you. Just we have so many great back and forths. I love the opportunity to share with so many people all across the globe. It is so great. Whoa, you're talking to somebody from Hong Kong. Whoa, you're talking to somebody from London. From Germany. It's Australia. A lot of Australians. Just so fun. At Robert Liefeld. That's me over on the platform formerly known as Twitter X. On Instagram, I am at Rob Liefeld. It is more of a visual diary. I have been holding on to so many images I can't show you. I've got a final Deadpool project. I've got a second issue of Last Blood and more extreme projects and extreme news. And you're likely going to read about that first there on Instagram. I am excited to share all of the visual imagery of my life, my friends, my family, my meals, my stuff. Again, it's been a while, but I want to remind you, my family thinks my wonderful Generation Z kids think my account is then my account is somewhere between sad and mid. But I invite you to join with me over on Instagram. Give me a follow and look at my stories and my stuff. That's what I'm sharing over there. News, images, so much more to come on Instagram. I'm just at Rob Liefeld. Just at Rob Liefeld, not the big Robert Liefeld like there is on Twitter X. At Rob Liefeld, got another blue check. Both have blue checks telling you that I am the real deal. I am I am verifiable. Verifiable, not vertifiable. I am verifiable. So check me out. Instagram at Rob Liefeld, Twitter X at Robert Liefeld. We have a group. It's over on Facebook. We would invite you. I'd love to have you over there. It's called Rob Liefeld, Marvel Extreme and Beyond. We're sharing art, stories. So many of the conversations that we start here on the Robservation podcast continue there in our group. We would love for you to be a part of it, to discuss it. There's art contests run by the gentleman that co-moderates, administrates the page with me, the group with me. It's not a page, it's a group. Terry Sala, S-A-L-A, Terry Sala. And he runs these incredible art contests. If you like to draw, illustrate, there's weekly art contests. We all vote in, weigh in. It is done by polling. Join us. Just tons of great vibes, great sharing. We all have the passion for the comics and look, we keep the vibes really good. None of that negative crap. Anybody comes over there and starts dragging anybody anywhere, they're just gone. It's super upbeat. Love to have you. Rob Liefeld, Marvel Extreme and Beyond. I am on an app. It's called Whatnot. You got to catch me there. There is so much new and exclusive stuff that I am sharing with you, but you need to be on the app on Whatnot. I go live, my live stream. If you follow me, if you get Whatnot and you follow Rob Liefeld, you'll get an alert. You'll get a notice that I am going to go live. I am speaking straight into the camera for the 2 hours or so that I am speaking to you. A lot of people say it's an extension of this very podcast. I got to remind you, it's a little later at night. I'm fresh in the morning. This podcast is a fresh in the morning podcast. The live stream is a little sour at night, okay? A little sweet and sour. You want the sour, Rob? The one that is trying to block out all the voices talking during the live stream because there's a feed and we're talking and I am sharing with you my exclusives. I have a brand new comic, Last Blood. Last Blood number 2 is about to drop. You're going to have Whatnot to obtain it. The first issue sold out. Every single edition sold out. We're going to be offering another edition of number 1 when number 2 drops. You're going to want to find it there. I wrote it. I drew it. I illustrated it. 28 pages, brand new, original from me, concerning my extreme and image characters in kind of the final chapter of their lives. Do not miss out. Join with me over there. Also, all new Deadpool, an X-Men product. This X-Men 97 number 1 cover that I did is the most requested anything I've ever done. But it drops, I believe, April 11th. You're going to have the Whatnot app to interface and to be able to obtain that from me. And they are going to be few and far between. There's multiple different versions, but the foils are the ones that people are just going crazy for. I can't wait to share this with you. I draw online. We remark. We sign custom signatures. We have exclusive Deadpool comics, New Mutants comics, Spider-Man comics, Captain America, Evangeline, Prophet, my extreme comic books, Blood Wolf. There is so much going on there. I wanted to hang with you very much, but to do that, get the Whatnot app, download the app, follow Rob Liefeld. You'll be alerted as to when my shows go live and where we can interface next. I've been talking about this CGC signing. I mentioned it earlier in the show. This is where you go to the premier grading company in the world, CGC, for comic books. We are going to try and get your books back to you in the fastest manner possible with the highest grades and conditions. We can't guarantee, but we're going to try our very hardest. The first time I did this last fall, my very first CGC in-house signing, we were able to deliver the book super fast. You guys got them, great turnaround, and you guys got great grades. You were so satisfied with them. The Deadpool Wolverine movie is coming. The fever for this stuff is at a high. Trust me, I know the numbers are getting crazy. You got to get to the CGC website, look up the Rob Liefeld in-house private signing, pull down the menu, follow the instructions and get your books in. The deadline is early May, maybe May 1st, but you have the rest of this entire month of April to get those books in. Get on that. Do not procrastinate. Get that in. This is the second one that I have done, and we are going to get these books back to you as soon as possible. Our goal is to have them back prior to July 27th when Deadpool Wolverine hits. So get on that as soon as possible. At the end of each and every episode, I share your reviews that you left for me about this show. And I'm going to tell you right now, we got a doozy. We got a whopper. We got a monster today. It's incredible. I was moved so much by this incredible review. The Apple platform is where I get 90% of your reviews. It helps us stand out. It gives us a higher visibility. You are so generous in taking out your keyboard and typing up these incredible ideas and thoughts of support And we just appreciate it so much. My man, Reed, who produces the show with me, adds the cool cue music at the beginning, packages this, formats this. Listen, here's the deal. We just, I just cannot tell you enough how much I appreciate this. And I am about to read this latest review. It is from AZN Funk, as in funk, as in funk, like not as in jazz, as in funk. It says, Robservation is fresh and fun. 5 stars. It says, incoming facts. Hey, bud, greetings from Oakland, California. I mentioned this because before listening to Robservations, I had no idea that Rob was discovered at the Oakland Comic Con, WonderCon back in the day. Little tidbits like this are why I keep coming back to this podcast. Robservations is the ultimate backstage pass to the underbelly of the comic book and pop culture industry and history. Rob speaks to topics that always start from the perspective of a fan first, industry insider second. Because I was only 10 years old when I started reading comics in the early 90s, I was only aware of what was happening in comics at the time. But after listening to Robservations, it's amazing how much was happening around the comics industry. If you're a fan of comics, toys, TV, movies, pop culture, you'll be delighted to add Robservations to your playlist. If you're not into comics, you'll find something of value in the 300-plus episode library. Rob's perspective is fresh and fun, and most of all, factual. He brings the receipts each and every time. Seriously, though, when are we going to get the L Boys streaming show? I need this ASAP. And yes, Rob's impression of Todd is worth the price of admission alone. Thank you for jumping on the mic each time and sharing your vast experiences, industry knowledge, and some drama with your fans. Hope to see you at a Oakland convention, Bay Area convention in the future. Cheers. Wow. Thank you. That is a Hall of Fame review. If I ever read one, as in funk, thank you. Thank you for the 5 stars. Thank you for saying the show is fresh and fun and that you enjoy it. And thank you for expressing your the connection that you have with the show. That is the intent, is to just bring you stories of the comic book world, my passion and my love of the comic book world. And I am so thankful that it is reaching you and that we share this together. When you leave, any of you read, review, leave reviews for this show. Sometimes you just send them to me in other different formats. If you leave them on the Apple platform, I will get them. I will read them back. I am always so excited to share them. One last order of business, if it interests you. I have a Patreon, Rob Liefeld Patreon. I'm a creator over on Patreon. We have started putting exclusive content only on that page, art, images, pages, and podcasts. There is podcasts over there for Patreon subscribers. If you want to check that out, that is available to you. We are still giving you these episodes twice a week on this platform, come what may. Until spring break is coming, it's coming sooner than you think. So I will be taking a break after pounding this out for 4 months. We are crushing it. We've had anniversaries. We are closing in on our 4-year mark. The 4-year exactly anniversary is coming. We passed 350 episodes, and we are going to keep this baby trucking. But there is extra content. Jack Kirby versus Jim Shooter, a comic book feud, is available right now over on my Patreon. So if you are interested in that, subscribe. At the end of each and every of these podcasts, I end it because I'm thinking of you and so many of you that I've met. So many of you at WonderCon came up to me. You shared with me again how much you love the podcast. And you know, I always ask you why do you love it? And so many of you are just so just effusive in telling me that it's just the passion and the knowledge and some of the experiences that are passed down, and that it's upbeat and it's fun. And I'm going to try and keep doing all of those things on your behalf. But I am thinking of you, and I want to know that you are well, that you are well mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Those four quadrants, at some point, I just want to know that you are doing exactly what you need to be doing to function at the best possible level, to laugh, to love, to be smiling, to have great times. If you're not, get off the grind. Take some time away from the grind. Maybe it's one day during the weekend that you're not going to do the regular weekend routine. You're going to grab a comic book, a graphic novel. You're going to watch that great streaming television show. You're going to actually go out to the theater. You're going to get that big bucket of popcorn. You're going to watch that killer movie that you've been putting off. You're just going to go. You're going to change it up a bit. You're going to have a great dinner. meal with your loved ones, your friends, your family, your wife, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, and you are just going to have just a different stimulating experience. Changing it up, getting off the treadmill that we're all on. I'm on a treadmill too. Going to WonderCon Friday was me getting off the treadmill. It was not really convenient. It wasn't it really wasn't something I could easily fit in. I've got so many commitments. I'm doing so much work. I had family coming in, but I said, I got to go do this. And it refreshed me. It just gave me that just different perspective. And seeing a good friend like Murat and experiencing comics and looking at expensive comic books and expensive art. It was just fun and just interacting with this passion that I have in a different manner than I would normally. I mean, there's a comic book convention down the way from my house. I've got to check it out. I had to check it out. It inspired me and it pivoted me. And of course I had a Reese's peanut butter cup. You know I did. I coupled it with, I had great food from the food trucks. That was part of the desire. And then I had a great big candy bar, a Reese's big cup that was delicious. I've been really heavy on the Easter cups, but I had one of those. I had one of the caramel big cups because, man, that is just a different, quite dangerous, I might add, quite dangerous sensation. Dangerous in that you kind of want to eat 10 of them at once. But it just, there's my pivot. That's me getting off the grind. That's me practicing what I preach here. I am pulling for you. I hope you are doing the very best you possibly can. I hope that you are well. And I am giving you, boom, a fist bump right through this Blue Yeti mic, wishing you all the very best. Listen, life is a grind. We got to take time for ourselves. And so I am pulling for you. I am pulling for you. In the meantime, get back here. We have so much more to discuss. Don't leave me behind. I'll be here waving you down because we are, you know it's coming. Here we go. Drum roll. We are absolutely, most definitely, and inevitably going to talk again real soon.